Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
Kat, hello.
Hello. long time no see.
Long time no see. we have...
been like 15 minutes.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. It's been... God, my heart has just been empty without having you here. Now, after
might
that
as well. Here we
lie,
are.
let's... that was really mean. I apologize. Let's move directly on to season one, episode 11, Blood Calls to Blood.
Whew.
The air date was March 22nd, 2016. One of my favorite things about it, because all I can hear in when I say Blood Calls to Blood is it's that joke of like, why did they name that episode that? And then halfway through the episode, we go, oh, because he says it. He says it in the show. Written
blood
by Marjorie David, directed by Mersey Almas, starring Catherine McNamara, Dominic Sherwood, Alberto Resende, Matthew Daddario, Emir Atabir, Isaiah Mustafa, Harry Shum Jr., guest starring Alan Van Sprang, Adam J. Harrington, Maxim Roy, David Castro, John Corr, Stephanie Bennett, Mimi Cusick, which I'm so excited to introduce her, Raymond Black, co-stars Jordan Hadima and Stephen R. Hart. Kat, take us away with what we are in store for in this episode.
Blood calls to blood. The truth won't always set you free. After receiving important intel about Valentine from a surprising ally, Clary, Jace, and Luke devise a plan to rescue Jocelyn. With the mission looking almost impossible, the three will stop at nothing to rescue Clary's mother and put a stop to Valentine once and for all. Meanwhile, Inquisitor Herondale arrives at the Institute for Isabel's trial as Alec turns to Magnus for help. Whoa! Complicated.
Herondale, huh? Question mark to be revisited later, because I feel like it keeps coming up in the podcast. Like, isn't that how you sign off? I wonder why that is. To be revealed.
Don't know.
We shot this back in early September 2015. Wow. Interesting. Yeah. Go on. What's interesting?
A little book nugget, because you mentioned the episode title and how it all ties in. It ties in even deeper because it's actually a quote from the book that's said by the Seely Queen. Blood calls to blood under the skin, but love and blood are not the same. Is the quote from the book.
Damn that Seely Queen. Ugh. Damn that Seely Queen. Good grief. Valentine chose Renwick's as his hideout slash base of operations in New York. Why was it changed all to Chernobyl? I would imagine because we had a Chernobyl-esque looking studio space at the back of our studio. Like there was just a room that looked like a decrepit, like inside of a factory. And what's honestly, what's scarier than that, like than that whole thing that happened after watching the show? Did you watch the show? Yeah. Which
I
weirdly,
haven't seen it yet. It's been on my list.
It? Oh my God. It's so, no. You have to watch it, but it's like harrowing.
Okay.
It's really quite hard to watch.
Okay. I just finished Ozark, so I need a new show. I'm on.
Yeah. but check it out. And then maybe it'll make a little more sense as to why that's where we put Valentine.
Yeah. I mean, it you know, bad guy needs a lair that's as evil as he is. And I think Chernobyl works.
It ticks some boxes for sure in that case.
It does. It certainly does. So we left off last episode with
Daddy.
Beautiful performance by you, Dom.
Thanks.
You found your father.
Daddy's here. Big old hug. Good grief. Oh, look at that. Tugging at the heartstrings. But also dying.
But also, I'm astounded. And I was astounded then. And every time I rewatch clips from this episode, you and Adam look so alike.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
Incredible casting.
Yeah.
It's astounding. I mean, minus, you know, the eyes, you are almost identical.
Yeah, they really did do a good job casting there. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And Adam, and this is the other thing as well, is not for nothing, like everyone who was cast was a nice person. Like there were so few people.
Yeah.
If anyone, there was like maybe one that comes to mind that was cast that was not a nice person, and they didn't spend very long on this show.
Oh, yeah.
And we can kind of, I don't think it's appropriate to talk about that necessarily ever, but.
Nope, I don't think we will.
Just all of a sudden, that person wasn't there anymore.
Yep.
But. Everyone that we had in, like Adam and Nicola, even the kids, like they came in with such a good attitude and they came in with such like talent and positivity to them that it was a real pleasure to work with them. And I wonder if, because this was all Toronto-based casting and wasn't even the guys that we met, Elizabeth and Jonathan, we didn't really meet them. And I'm sure they would have had final say. Elizabeth and Jonathan would have had final say on the casting, or maybe they wouldn't. I don't know. I don't really know how that works.
I don't know. I think our producers, like Ed, would have had final say.
That makes sense.
I think.
Yeah. But either way, incredibly fortuitous if it wasn't intentional that we just had a bunch of nice folks come in.
It's very true. And also folks that threw themselves in and just committed to telling the story and committed to the world and, you know, even though they were only there for a few days, dove in head first and decided to play. And that's the biggest gift. When you get fresh blood and they're as game to sort of toss the ball around as you are.
Yeah. And Adam really fit into this world, like our world, like our filming world so quickly. Like he really was a part of the furniture. And it, you know, an episode takes less than 2 weeks, like 10 days to film an episode. Even less than that when you start running out of money and they're like, oh, we got to do this in 7 days. And he was just like, yeah, it happens. And he was just like part of it. He was just this guy who all of a sudden was just another one of us, which was amazing.
Yeah, it was so great. And also, too, I think it helps. Marjorie wrote such a wonderful episode in this. And it just right off the bat in knowing what happens and having the sort of hindsight and having some separation from it, going back and listening, Jace says it right off the bat. You literally say the, you know, what is revealed later in the episode right off the bat. And we're constantly talking around, you know, why is this wrong or something's off or all this is happening. And so many little Easter eggs and little seeds are planted knowing what happens at the end of the episode. It's amazing how many things are threaded throughout, given that, or the fact that, you know, when the Mortal Cup comes out and all of these things, they don't show Adam's face ever.
Yeah.
You don't see his reaction to any of these things. So it doesn't reveal the thing that we find out later in the episode. But,
I think it also makes sense, like it plays that Jace is poisoned, like it, you know, however this sort of demonic poison starts to manifest its body. And I think we went with sort of like a like an asphyxiation, like a snake poison, which I don't know if snake poison does that to you. I think snake venom tends to like solidify your blood, which is pretty grim. That's a pretty grim way to go. But this is what we went with, is this sort of lack of ability to breathe. So that tied into sort of the shock of seeing my, you know, 12 years something dead father. Jace also isn't paying attention to his reactions, which is interesting, and will feed in later on that there are things that are said in this first sort of interaction. He does sort of seem to know things that nobody else except for him would know, which Jace doesn't see what it turns out that Clary notices later on. Anyway, that's much later in the episode. Why are we talking about it now, Kat? Why did you make me talk about it?
Well, I made you talk about it because now, well, first of all, we have a quick pop of Izzy in trouble. But then we get, because we know that Isabel is, what? I just wrote down Izzy in trouble. What happens?
She's going to court. Izzy's going to court.
Izzy's going to court. Izzy's in trouble. We've got less.
They blame her for the demon attack. For the attack on Melion.
But we can't take Jace back to the Institute, and he needs blood. So where do we go? We go to the Jade Wolf.
Yeah.
Because the only other adult that we know is Luke, who we know is on our side, is Luke.
Seriously, the only other grown-up that we know in this is Luke.
Is Luke. So we
Dad, we need help.
Dad, help. Other dad is here, and he's dying. Help.
Yeah.
Because evil dad left him. Anyway. So many dads.
So many dads.
So also, this is another one of my favorite wax on, wax off, welcome to the down world moments where they have a bloody steak on the plate and Luke is teaching Simon, okay, you can't eat the steak, but you can drink the blood. So this is how we adapt and this is how we live in the world and this is how we do these things. And it's just a slight moment of levity, a quiet comedy before we burst through the door going, help, Jace is dying. And this scene I love to call the rushed exposition. We're all talking so fast. It's the scene of let's all say our plan really fast so the audience knows what we're all about to go do and set it up and off we run.
Yeah.
But another interesting
amazing little piece of little behind. So one of my favorite things to look for in actors, or like performances, I guess, not just actors, is when someone has noticed or like someone is acting in the background, like the scene's not about them, but you are constantly in character behind the scenes. And fucking Alberto, as always, like crushing it. The door busts open. We come rushing in. Luke runs straight up to us as the dad figure absolutely would. Simon rushes over as the best friend would also. But there is a beam of sunlight coming through the window and you just see him in the background go, whoop, nope. Can't go there because that's death for me. And it's just Alberto being, you know, amazing. Like a credit to these actors. And Alberto is such a wonderful example. Actors who are constantly in their character's head. They're constantly thinking like those people because anyone else would have walked through that. And he didn't.
Yeah,
anyway, exactly. Kat, please continue. I'm sorry for interrupting.
I was going to bring up something very similar in that when you see Luke and Michael Wayland having the conversation for the first time, Adam will not make eye contact with Isaiah for more than, you know, a millisecond because of their, you know, other stuff that we'll talk about later on. But it's just another one of those little seeds that gets planted.
Yeah.
So basically what we find out at the end of this scene is Luke and Michael are going to try and keep Jace alive and Jace needs blood. So, hey, look, a vampire. Simon, let's go talk to your buddies at Hotel de Mort and get some blood.
Little help.
And off we go. So then we go to negotiate with Raphael, who is not helpful because he's at risk.
He's Camille, a prickly customer.
He is. But we know Camille had some blood because Camille had the taste for human blood. We know this. So we have Simon the negotiator. And then the package deal as backup of Clary coming in. But we learn about subjugates, which is a bit of vampire lore that we haven't heard about before. And we don't use much after this. But they are humans that – and actually, this was more used in Vampire Academy than it was in our show. But it's humans that voluntarily allow vampires to feed on them and then sort of in the shadow world become zombie-type slaves to these – vampires.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, obviously against the Accords and it's frowned upon, but we know Camille must have a stash of blood somewhere. So we're trying to find it. But it's interesting that, you know, it's actually more prevalent in your other supernatural exploit than in this one.
I know. Funny that. I was never part of that, though. He must have been. Christian must have. He had to feed. So he must have been a part of it at some point somewhere. But that, I think, is that's a great Lucy, Zoe, Sarah, Gabriel scene. And we get to talk about people who are obsessed with vampires and they just want to be a part of that world, whether that means being a feeder, which literally means giving your blood to the vampire so they can eat you. Pretty grim. Pretty grim stuff for young adult.
But it's great seeing Simon step up to the plate and sort of own his new mm-hmm. role as a vampire and own the fact that he has a place in this world and he can use it and he has information and he has leverage. And especially the fact that he's using it to help Jace, which is also something that's not really touched on.
I think he's using it to help Clary. I mean, well, look, Simon has such a good heart. And we said this from the beginning. Like, I have a line, like, way later on in season three that's like, Simon's a good guy. You know, I always kind of liked him. I always admired that about him. And it's when Jace, you know, there's a section where he can't lie. But that I really do feel that's how Jace has always felt about Simon. And that's, again, why there's that tension there. You don't get angry by people you don't anger isn't elicited from people that you don't care about.
Right.
I think very early on, both Jace and Simon see the goodness in each other and see that actually in a lot of ways they're fairly similar people. And really the thing that got in the way is Clary and their love for Clary, which is a shame. And it's all your fault, Clary.
Sorry about that.
All I can say. We would have been bestest buddies foreverest were you not in the picture.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point too, because as, you know, the relationships shift, each one wants what's best for Clary and seeing the good in the other person. Mm-hmm. It's really easy if you see someone that you care about and that you're crushing on with somebody who's not a good person, then you can be like, well, they're not a good person. So, you know, what are you doing? Don't be stupid.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's somebody great and who has an amazing heart as well makes it harder, you know?
Yeah. It does make it harder. Does Raphael just give you two bags of O negative blood? Is that what I just saw for a full blood transfusion?
I think he gives me like four, maybe three. It's more than two.
Okay. Well, that'll do it. Yeah. Four bags for sure.
I mean, you're a shadow hunter, right? So you heal.
Is that
more efficiently?
That's true. Yeah. And also maybe shadow hunters only have like, you know, 2.5 liters of blood going through them. Who knows?
Sure.
Is that true about O negative blood? Do you know that?
I mean, I would hope that was fact-checked.
But, I would think so,
but
right?
Yeah, like, no, there is one blood type. There is one blood type that's the universal donor and one blood type that's the universal recipient. And I believe O is the universal donor. And I think AB positive is the universal recipient.
I think it's O, yeah, because blood group type O negative, blood transfusion, blood group O negative is the variety of the blood that has the lowest risk of causing a serious reaction. There you go, yeah. O negative.
And then I think AB positive is the one that's the universal recipient, I think. But again, why is this always a science show, Dom? We make this a science lesson every time.
It's fascinating.
It is.
I think it's really interesting. I think blood is cool.
Yeah.
And it's the title of our episode. So, you know, call it a Freudian slip, but this is what we were talking about.
Yeah. No, but truly, this is something that I love about the mythology of the shadow world, is that so much of real world science and history and religion and all of these things play a factor in the mythology of the world. And it grounds it in the sense of reality that makes it a lot of fun to have those little Easter eggs and those little tie-ins to, you know, a world that is real to us.
Absolutely.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
We've just left the vampire den with the blood, and yes, we do. We meet Mimi for the first time.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Mimi is like Canadian, like TV royalty,
yeah.
And somehow we were lucky enough to bag her on our show. And it just shows, like when she gets to set, she is such a professional.
Mm-hmm.
She is so prepared. She knows exactly what's going on. She doesn't take any shit from anybody, but is also not unkind about it.
Yeah.
Like she's like, you know, I'm like, this is what we do. And she's sort of earned that role. And I don't think there was a single person who didn't sort of look up to her as this, like, wow, you are just truly amazing at what you do, which is so fortunate/unfortunate that we, Jason and Imogen, get to have a relationship in the future,
mm-hmm.
which ends up being so lovely and then so quickly so terrible. But
yes.
That is to be discussed in another, episode of the podcast.
No, but you're absolutely right,
yeah.
about the sort of reverence that surrounds Mimi when she's on set. And I mean, I personally, mm-hmm. I've been a fan of her for so many years. And when I found out we were getting her on the show, it's the same thing when we found out we were getting Alan on the show. And, you know, all these actors that are legendary in, you know, Canadian
yeah.
television and American television that's shot in Canada, and all of these elements that, you
mm-hmm.
know, you get these powerhouse actors to come in and they just add so much to the world, and we get to learn so much from them, even just by bearing witness
yeah.
to how they operate on set. And it helps that she's one of the most kind, fun human beings as well.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was about to say. She just has this ability to make you laugh and smile. And she's, whilst playing this, like, you know, basically steel-clad bitch, she is so nice, like such a lovely woman. And it's wonderful. It's really wonderful to work with someone so amazing.
But I mean, she makes such an entrance into the show as the Inquisitor, and you know, anyone who can just waltz in up to the head of the Institute and, you know, just basically take her down a few notches and
yeah.
become this sort of example. This is other than when Nicola sort of swept in as Maris and laid down the law, this is the first time we've seen sort of the next level of the law is hard, but it's the law, and sort of the harshness of the shadow world and sort of the rigidity of the morality that they're raised with. And it's, you know, we've seen so many shadow hunters that are bending these rules and dealing with their emotions and, you know, being led astray by this, that to see someone who is so firmly rooted in that rigidity is
totally
such a contrast.
Totally. I also think it's really fun. Like it's a really wonderful thing for us to experience both on set and for audiences to witness on camera is these strong women, like really strong, powerful female forces, whether they're on the positive side or the negative side, wherever your stance may be, you know, Stephanie is this wonderfully powerful performer who does an incredible job. And then we get Mimi coming in, who's sort of her antithesis, and these two women get to sort of face off. And I love that, like seeing this subversion of power in these worlds is very, very cool and a very inspiring thing. And credit to all of the creative teams and all of the people who put this together, because that's wonderful. And it's wonderful to see. And I'm glad I could be a part of it.
Well, and it's so true. I mean, and, you know, growing up, these are the sort of characters that I looked for in film and TV. And these are the sort of women that I wanted to see. Yeah. And that wasn't always the case, you know, in my childhood. And just to be a part of this resurgence of female characters that are so diverse and so nuanced and so each character is so different in how they exhibit that strength and in how they exhibit that agency. And it's provides so many examples of what the strong, empowered woman can be. And it's not just one thing. It can be anyone and anything. And I was really grateful to be a part of that and to get to witness so many women bring that to life in at such a young age too. Bless you. Are you all right? Oh, bless you. Oh, Dom is sneezing. Bless you.
I'm back. Okay. Wow, I just had a little sneezing attack. I'm allergic to, I remember now, I think I'm allergic to tree pollen. Like it's a fairly common allergy to have. But it's the trees in this area where, you know, where I grew up are pollinating between, I guess, like early April to sort of the beginning of June.
Yeah.
That's when it's happening. So it's just a shitty time to be me for these like 2.5 months. So if you hear me sneeze on the podcast, that's why, because I'm just allergic to the air.
Well, we'll get you a
nothing to be done
about
tree
pollen rune for that. I'll start working on that.
Can you imagine? Honestly, yeah. Like, why didn't we ever bring that up? Like, in thousands of interviews we've done for this show, they're like, what is like the one rune? And we're all like, oh, I want to fly, or I want to be invisible. Fuck that. I want to not have itchy eyes. Like, that's what I want. I don't care about flying. If I could never be allergic to anything ever again, yeah, that would be wonderful. And you, I can only imagine, must
oh,
be the
man,
same.
Oh, man, I would love that.
Right?
I would love that. I don't know. I always said a Mary Poppins rune. You know, the spoonful of sugar, tidy up. Because
That's another one. I think it's probably because I'm in my 30s now. And when they asked me those questions, I was in my 20s and I was like, no hangovers and blah, blah, blah. Now I'm just like, I'm okay with a hangover. I want like making the bed to be fun. Like I want those jobs to be, I want a room that makes that job fun and not like a pain in my ass every time I have to do it.
You could turn it into a game if you wanted to make making the bed fun.
I've tried it all. I hate it. I hate it. It's a stupid task to have to do. You have to get the ends of the duvet and then get the sheet on it and then it never ends up right. And I hate it. I hate that job. So that's the rune I want. Wow. I went on
we went
a
off
whole
the rails.
Different tirade there than,
all right. Now we're back.
Than I thought was going to happen.
Let's get
Where
back
are we?
Into it.
Clary's back with Michael.
Yeah. So this scene, rewatching it, you know, obviously knowing what's happening, I tried to sort of watch it this time as an audience that maybe didn't know what
a
was
viewer.
Happening. And it comes across as a really sweet scene where he's actually trying to reach out and they're connecting and it's quite lovely. But knowing what I know, I find it incredibly sketchy.
Well, because he is, isn't he? Like, he is trying to reach out.
It's hard to watch.
That's what he's trying to do. He's trying to reach out. Yeah. We can't say who she is to him Mm-mm. yet until, Mm-mm. like, in 18 minutes' time when we can say. But mm-hmm. he's genuinely trying to reach out.
Yeah.
He's trying to have that relationship. Anywho, let's power past that so we can get to it and actually talk about it.
we don't get a lot of this in the series in general. And it's odd that it's in this it's not odd that it's in this episode, but you would think that in an episode where there's so many high stakes, you wouldn't have a moment of this. We have a really, really sweet Clace scene. And in fact, this scene, I feel it's, you know, we had the first kiss and we had all of that, but there's been so much happening. This scene, I think, is the real solidification of them as a relationship and sort of their, both of them acknowledging we're falling in love with each other in a way.
Mm-hmm. Fun little behind the scenes thing from this episode here. So this is fun. So I remember when we first got close to each other and we were by each other's faces and whatever, and I heard Mersey call cut and then like some whispering from the village. And I was like, what does that mean? Like, that's not normally a good sign. What's going on there? And basically what it was, I can't remember what scene we had come from. I would imagine probably the fight scene, but I had dirt under my nails from whatever it was we were doing previously. And when my hands went up to your face, you could see it. And I heard them say like, is this like a Shadowhunters thing? And they're like, no, this isn't part of the lore. And they're like, can we go and clean his nails so it doesn't look disgusting? And I'm like, thank you guys for catching that for me. Cause you're right. That would have been gross. But like, that studio was dirty and it happens. Like we would get grimy and we run from one thing to the other so quickly that it's just not something I thought about, which is kind of gross in and of itself. So Mersey, thank you for catching that for me. I appreciate it.
Mersey was so wonderful. I remember, you know, I hadn't worked with a lot of female directors in my career up until this point. And she was so generous and kind and just on top of it. And to watch someone like her run a set, and the respect and the authority that she had, but also, you know, the creativity and the taste and the sense of play, it really struck me, and it stuck with me all these years. You know, even though we've worked with so many great female directors on the show since then, she kind of set the bar very high for me in that regard.
Yeah, no, she was she's wonderful, and I had a really good time working with her.
Oh, and we get to revisit the Falcon story. It's very important that we talk about that. With Clary having gathered enough information from seeing Michael and Jace together, she's put the pieces together that the Falcon story wasn't just a legend about a random little boy. It was a memory from Jace's childhood.
Correct.
And I find it lovely that she's sort of standing up for him here and going, it's not right. Don't let him push you around. It's not right that he did this to you. And sort of questioning the way that, you know, questioning the way of the Shadowhunters and the way of how archaic things are. But, you know, I know that that story is really important to you, Dom, as somebody who created this character.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's such a defining factor as to who he is, who Jace is, you know, this development of him. And then the reverse of that with the discovery of what we're about to discover, and figuring out that, like, oh, actually some of these lessons were backwards and they didn't teach me to be better. They actually made me weaker. Is so Jace sort of goes through these, like, he's this character, he is this person. And then from sort of later on in this episode goes through this, like, oh man, I don't really know who I am. Like, I don't know what, and that's sort of then the congruent theme for Jace sort of throughout the rest of the show is I'm not really sure who I am, and I'm not really sure which way is north, because my bedrock keeps shifting. Like I keep, you know, the ground is shifting underneath me and I don't know where I am, which is really interesting. So this is really the first time we get to see that is this episode.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, talking about all these heavy stakes and such, Let's take a little lighter and let's talk about the laughing that we had in the following scene.
The around the table. God.
This scene.
No one is looking at each other. Like, I'm watching it right now. Nobody is looking at each other. Like, none of us. You can almost count it. It's like a half a second of eye contact and then look away and then look away and then look away. And the reason behind this, Kat, do you want to tell this story?
So this is a scene where we're sort of, it's another exposition scene where we're planning out our mission of, we know where to find Valentine, we know where he has Jocelyn, we're going to go, we're going to save her, we're going to figure this out. So we have Luke, we have Michael Wayland, we have Jace and Clary, and we're all sitting around this table. I don't know what it was.
There's something about
the day. For some reason, we all got the giggles. And it's like when you're, you know, in a church service or at a funeral or something and you get the giggles, or at a, you know, a quiet class or something, and you just can't stop laughing. All four of us. And granted, we are all consummate professionals. We keep it together. We're really good at not messing up a day of filming. Not in this instance. And it's so funny you say that, because we all play it off as like, oh, we're thinking.
Serious.
About,
so serious.
I'm just going to look away and ponder this thing. And even Adam uses the humor to be sort of like a dark gallows humor at one point. Because you see him almost go. And he's just using every inch of it. And it's so great to see.
I can probably count the amount of times that that happened to me where it was like completely debilitating on one hand on Shadowhunters, maybe on two hands in my entire career. But it's so rare that it happens. But when it does, we're just a mess. So like Matt and I have one, and it ended up in the bloopers. So it went public. And it's just, once it starts happening, there's just nothing to be done. It's just, you're just giggling. Yeah. Like it's such an involuntarily elicited reaction. You're just kind of stuck giggling, and you can try and get back into it. But then no matter what it is, everything reminds you of that thing that's funny. Especially because I guess that makes it harder. Like if we look into the psychology of it, whatever was funny initially, whatever that stimulus was in the scene or related to the scene in some way. So we have to do that same thing over and over and over again until we get it right. And whatever that thing was that's funny is still going to be in the scene. Like we don't change it. So because that's how filming works. It's such a nightmare when it happens. And then you're like wasting everyone's time, and everyone's starting to get frustrated. And we're like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Like, I know I'm pissed off at this too, but I can't stop it from happening. It's like the hiccups. Like once it's going, it's going.
It is. It is like the hiccups.
I've never had the hiccups on set.
Oh, really?
You ever had the hiccups on set?
Yes, I have.
Have you? Interesting.
And it's because you try and time it between your lines. So, I mean, trying to suppress a hiccup is almost, I don't think it's as hard as trying to suppress giggles like this, but it's up there.
It's up there. And it was really something, which I think, because this was actually quite a long scene. This was like a three-page long scene that has been condensed into a very short, like, let's just get the information we need out and then get these guys off our set. And that's sort of what has ended up happening here. But you don't get the giggles with people you don't like. Like, that doesn't happen. So it's sort of a testament to four people who cared about each other sat around a table, ruining a day of filming.
But hey, hopefully we provided some entertainment.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting Mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get Mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for Mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for Mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
This brings us to Alec going to Magnus because they don't have the cup. They don't have any recourse. But what they do have is Magnus.
Does Alec go to Magnus?
Alec goes to Magnus to ask him to represent Isabel. And Magnus plays hard to get.
Oh, that's right.
And Magnus, because in payment, it's interesting. Alec shows up.
Yeah. Yeah, no. He's here. He's at his place.
Yeah, so he's at his place and he shows up to ask him to be Isabel's attorney because downworlders are not allowed in the court, but they are allowed to, shadow hunters are allowed to choose their own representation. So there's a loophole. But in return, because Magnus, we see Magnus a little bit hurt that Alec has chosen to marry Lydia. And you can kind of see that not quite bitterness, but that little bit of heartbreak that he's still going through.
It's jealousy.
Like, yeah.
That's what it is. It's jealousy. And also I think there's actually, as soon as I said jealousy, my brain sort of goes, well, it's not just jealousy. Cause there's also, I think we sort of forget sometimes that like the part of the reason, and we'll talk to the boys about this when we get them on, but I think part of the reason that Magnus falls in love with Alec is because he sees this lost little boy that I would imagine everyone in this situation has to go through at some point, is the version of coming to this acceptance of who you are, which with any luck turns into pride of who you are, as it should be. And I think that is part of the reason he's so hurt here as well, is like, man, I felt like we were so close to getting you to spread your wings and be the person that you are. And now you're going back on that. And that's, I wonder if there's an element of that there too.
Yeah, absolutely. But as you said, there is that bit of hurt that's there. And as a result of that, Magnus asks Alec as payment for his attorney services to give him his quiver and arrows, which, as we know, shadow hunters become very attached to their weapons. And it's like an appendage. It's a part of who they are. It becomes a part of how they move and how they fight. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he asks for that and the fact that Alec agrees to it, again, really speaks to the dire straits that they're in at this present moment.
Yeah, you don't want to lose your bow and quiver. Which, although the irony there is, I bet Matt was super stoked to not have to do an episode with that bow. Because do you remember the tensile strength of that bow? That was a real bow in season one. And the tensile strength of the bow was like 40 pounds.
Oh my gosh,
every time
he
would draw the bow, it was like 40 pounds he was drawing every time. And it wasn't until season two that they elasticated the string and it was lighter. It was a lighter draw. But season one, it was just a regular bow. He was just drawing and holding a compound bow, a reflex bow.
Yeah.
Which one is the one with the pulleys? That's compound,
right? That's a compound bow. So yeah. It must have been a reflex bow.
It was a reflex bow. So he's holding that 40 pounds of weight every time he draws the bow. It was nuts.
Oh my God, that is nuts.
But I digress.
No, the only thing I remembered is that because Matt is so broad-shouldered, every time he would wear the bow across his back, he would like run into doors and not be able to get through them. Which is something I experienced later on Arrow. I couldn't get through so many doors. I would like walk into things, but that's just me on a daily basis. It's just...
Amazed they let you hold on to it. Yeah, like that's such a you thing. I'm amazed they let you hold on to the bow.
They got to know me pretty quickly. But, now that we're... where does this take us to? Oh, so now we're at Renwick's, which is the Hearn.
Scouting.
We're scouting out the Hearn.
Mm-hmm.
So this is another thing about this episode is Clary has finally listened to Jace. Back in episode 7, he goes, pay attention to the details. Trust your instincts. you can, you know, and that's been percolating in the back of her head, and she's starting to do this. There's certain things that Michael Whalen says that don't add up. There's certain timelines that don't make sense of when Jace would have, you know, known that his father was dead versus when Jocelyn would have had other information. And there's all of these things aren't adding up. And it's Clary gets so close to putting the pieces together time and time again. And it's so frustrating as an audience who knows what's happening, because it's like the horror movie element of don't go down into the basement. You just know it's right there. And then something else happens. Something else happens that distracts them. Yeah. And it's this back and forth, and there's a distraction every time.
Yeah. So we're scouting Renwick's.
Yes.
Lots of bad guys. Lots and lots of bad guys at Renwick's. That's going to be a problem. They return back to report said findings, which leaves us with Jason Michael training, which sort of brings about the sort of big first question of like romance within Shadowhunters, romance within two Shadowhunters, and it actually being for love, as opposed to, you know, we're seeing it with Alec and Lydia, but that's more of a, you know, an arrangement for the two of them. And this is sort of the first time that it's like broached that like Shadowhunters fall in love for life. Like if this is what you're going to do, you fall in love for life. But I guess the whole parallel that we were trying to get to whilst trying to keep my hair out of my face during this boxing scene is, how do you love someone for life and also be a soldier with them and also not let your emotions cloud your judgment? Like there are so many of these like mixed paradoxes when it comes to Shadowhunter's teachings, which I think this was sort of the first time Jace is starting to go, well, that doesn't make any fucking sense. Like you're telling me that I can fall in love and that's great and it can be for life, but also these emotions should never get in my way. Well, how could they not? It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, and because that doesn't make any sense, this is why, you know, it brings into things that we'll see with the Morgensterns later, where and things that we see with Jace a little bit later too, is that emotions actually can make you more powerful and can help you access, if channeled in the right way, can help you access certain things, which is the whole advantage of this new generation.
Well, and disadvantage, isn't it? Later on, like that's the whole thing. These emotions with the Jonathan Sebastian thing, that does make them stronger, but it also makes them more dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, it's all well and good being stronger with these emotions if your moral compass points north, but if it points south, then fuck me, you're in real trouble. Yeah. You know, like if the most emotional, most passionate, you know, previously hellbound big brother comes out and is like, I'm going to use these emotions, but I'm going to use them for bad. And you're like, ah, shit, doggy. But again, to be discussed on a later date, because we haven't got to those people yet.
Okay, but this brings up just we see in this episode in particular how, you know, it's sort of the glamour comes down as to the Clave is not pure in their intentions all the time. The Clave is not without faults, and the Clave is not without their own sort of misguided ways of doing things and sometimes ill-intentioned ways of doing things. And it's interesting because maybe the whole concept of emotions cloud judgment is actually a survival technique of the Clave to sort of control and baseline the most powerful and the most gifted of Shadowhunters by telling them, like, don't use your emotions.
Maybe. Yeah. Like how long has this been a rule?
Exactly. Don't use your emotions. Don't go there. Because then everyone will be operating on the same level. And those that do have the ability, like Jonathan, like Clary, like Jace, to access that extra emotionally channeled power, maybe is the way to say it, they would never know, because that would be beaten out of them from childhood.
Because it's a risk, I wonder.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's better to not have any superheroes on the off chance that they become the supervillains. Who knows? Yeah. Bigger question.
Sounds like the Clave to me.
It does. It does indeed. That brings us quite neatly to a exceptionally well-dressed Harry Shum Jr. holding quite literal court. Look at him go.
I mean,
look at him go. He looks great.
With flair and style. Move over, Elle Woods. That we've got Magnus Bane.
seriously. Our legally brunette. I'm glad I got that reference.
Yeah.
So we leave the court in a somewhat tumultuous position. no questions answered to, I guess, father and son, father and daughter sort of situation. You know, the two teams are preparing themselves to go off to battle what looks like a fairly unwinnable fight, right? Like, from your scouting, it looks like, well, this is not great.
No, and I think, I mean, you just look at it and you go, how are they even going to try this? But I guess knowing that they have the Mortal Cup and knowing that they have leverage and knowing that, you know, Valentine is going to want at least Clary alive, you know, they're going to go in and they're going to do what they can and hopefully maybe sneak in and make as little ruckus as possible. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah,
but
I don't know.
What ensues is the battle that breaks many swords, if you remember.
Speaking of swords, this is the soul sword, correct?
Oh, that Magnus center touches. Of the... Yeah.
But this is not the one... The one I'm looking at is not the one I hold in season two.
Is it a different one? I didn't catch that.
I think that's a different sword.
Oh,
I'm pretty
gosh.
Sure it got redesigned.
Huh.
Because that doesn't look like... In fact, I know it's not because I fought with it in season two. That's not it.
Wow. Interesting. Little known fact.
I'm pretty sure. I wonder if anyone else noticed. If you did, give us a little...
Let us know. Something that, now that you bring that up, there was quite an interesting moment, and I love how Harry played this, when he asks the Inquisitor, will I die if I touch this?
Yeah.
Because that's the thing with the Soul Sword is Downworlders don't know and Downworlders don't trust the Clave not to kill them. And that's so, it's so heartbreaking to kind of see that even one of the most powerful Downworlders, it has to very adamantly make sure he asks exactly the right question of the Inquisitor so that he doesn't die.
Yeah, how interesting. Which brings us back to... Lydia in the court now questioning our beloved Isabel.
Yes.
So Izzy is taking the blame. Mm-hmm. She's covering for Jace. She's covering for Clary. She's covering for everything that was done during the Melian escape. And quite honestly, looking fabulous while she's doing it.
I mean, it's true. And it's one of those moments where, again, you see these three women. You see Lydia and you see Imogen and you see Isabel going head to head in this court, as it were, in this realm. And all three of them are standing their ground. And yet, well, for now, but they all make their case and they're all, you know, perfectly valid in that way. And yet it's so well done because you really are left with this sort of moral dilemma of, well, nobody's wrong in what they're saying, but also you can't have, you know, collateral damage because there was no malintent. Because the situation was wrong to begin with. So it's, how do you provide justice when everything is a gray area?
Well, that's the whole thing, isn't it? And what's so tricky about that is you do have to sort of trust the people who are in power above you right up until they let you down. And then it's time to shift that balance of power. Anywho, we're finally there. We're outside the Hearn. And we're at the fight of many broken swords.
Yes.
Which we can now talk about. First of all, Isaiah has like one of the coolest fight moves in this fight. And I remember seeing it in rehearsal and being like, that's amazing. That is so cool. He does this like, he like swings around the guy's neck and like takes him down because he's not transforming. So he's not using his actual werewolf stuff. He's using, I guess, his heightened senses, but his training as a shadow hunter to then fight these shadow hunters, which is amazing. And it looks amazing.
Yeah.
The issue we had, go on.
No, I was just going to say, this is why Luke is such a powerful force in this world, because not only is he a cop, he's had shadow hunter training and he's a werewolf. So that combination, he is this all powerful being, basically. He's got three sets of tools at his disposal to use. And yet he's, you know, it's what we see with a lot of our stunt coordinators and our stunt performers who are world champion martial artists. They are the most skilled people, but they will never show you. And it will be the last thing they do is to pull out those skills.
Yeah. That being said, with this Isaiah being so amazing in this fight scene, we had some issues. We had some issues this day with the swords. Now, the little ones, we didn't have this issue until this day, right? Like, it was just the bigger versions of these swords. So we had the little like half swords, Kat and myself, like sort of somewhere between like a dagger and a cleaver. And these longer ones, what we found out this day, we found out that if you impact them against another sword too many times, they snap at the hilt. So the blade comes off the sword. Mm-hmm. And I think the first one that I was like, yo, we got to, like, you know, a couple of them just broke and whatever. The first one where I was like, hey, we need to maybe do some more thinking about this was, I think it's a block from me, like here or down or something. I can't remember. But what I do remember is the long blade snapping mid swing and it just going past my face and being like, whoa.
Yeah.
That's not good. Unless it was intentional, in which case it was very skilled,
right.
But it was not intentional. And I think this was one of the big leading to a change swords wise thing.
Well, absolutely. And because what happens when a sword breaks is, as you said, the blade goes flying in a random direction and we don't know where that's going to be. So yeah. That could be nearly at your face. There was another one where it was one of our camera operators.
Yeah. He got hit.
Did he?
I think he got hit. Like we had to stop. Yeah. I think it was pretty bad.
Because I wasn't technically involved in that fight scene, so I was only tangentially kind of around. I heard about most of this.
Yeah, you got to scoot off. So you now go, why do we let you go on your own? Why do you go and pursue on your own?
Because I'm useless in a fight and time is of the essence at this point, I think.
Yeah.
And I have the cup, so I can control the demons anyway. So I'm, you know, in dire straits.
I know that.
Right.
Oh, yes, we do know that. Yeah, you're right. We all know that.
Yeah,
right,
everybody knows that.
And finally,
after
11 episodes, that brings Clary to her mother. She gets to see her mother for the first time.
Now, I want to touch
on
11
this. Episodes.
Yeah, I realize we haven't, in all of the times where we've seen Jocelyn in her fugue state, we have not talked about the bicycle seat rig that they had for her. To lay
on. Oh, yeah, that's right.
So in order to do this thing with Max, they actually had her there on set and they built this sort of rig that it was a metal pole with a sort of bicycle seat on top that she then had to lay herself down horizontally on and just float and exist in space for, you know, hours. Mm-hmm.
And
on
just
end.
Like move her arms and legs a little.
Yeah.
Like this. Yeah.
It's just a Pilates class all day long.
Bless her. She did, honestly, like some of these longer days, like this was a real workout. She did a really amazing job to not be bitching about that constantly, because I think I would have. That's a real pain in the ass to do. So actually, there's an interesting thing here. So we come, Michael and Jace come tearing after you guys and hop down that little step. And I remember the conversation being had. So I guess I wasn't fixed yet, because that's Jamie. That's my double, because I was genuinely worried about sprinting and hopping down. It was only 2 feet, but I was worried about sprinting and hopping down that step because my ankle still wasn't right. So that's Jamie. That's Jamie doing that. I remember that for sure.
Well, we still had a few episodes to do. So smart of you.
Anyway, we tear into the room.
Yeah, tear into the room. And then we see these demons sort of bouncing against the walls and trying to break in.
Mm-hmm.
And what that actually was, this was one of the coolest practical, because we didn't do a ton of practical effects. We just didn't have time on this first season. But they mm-hmm. had windows that were partially blocked out, I believe, and they had dancers with all these demon masks that would push through this fabric and push through into the light and sort of play with it to create mm-hmm. the shape of, you know, multiple demons when we only had a few folks.
I think we only had one guy in the suit. We only had one guy in the Ravenna demon suit this day.
Yeah. It was Hubert, wasn't it?
I would imagine so. Wasn't it always Hubert? I don't think we had anybody else come in and do that demon.
I think it might have always been
Hubert.
Because
he did such a good job in the physicality of it. I think so.
Yeah.
Hubert, who also came in season two after Hubert, I think, had an injury, did he not? He had a pretty drastic injury on another show and was out of action for a while. And as soon as he was back and able, he came in and he choreographed with us. And he was amazing. He was such a wonderful guy to have on set.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
Leaving our would-be heroes in the Hearn / Renwicks brings us back to the Inquisition.
Man.
Kat, tell us what's going on.
Out of the frying pan, into the fire.
I know, honestly, we got a whole bunch.
We're back in court, and what you have is Isabel making her case. And she makes this beautiful statement about, you know, why... She's taking the blame, but she you know, sort of says all this. And then Lydia, in the end, is who stands up to the Inquisitor.
Correct.
And Lydia comes in and goes, you know what? No, the law is hard, but it's the law. But also, there's a difference between the law and justice and what is actually right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, kudos to Lydia for being open to growth. And this is why we like Lydia, despite the fact that she's in between, you know, the most beloved ship of the fandom. We still like her as a character.
Yeah.
Because she's not villainized, because she's just trying to do the right thing. And she's just a woman who's caught in the middle trying to be a leader.
That's what I was going to say. Like, she's never been the villain. No. I don't think she's ever been a villain. She's just been like a person who was put in this position, and that position happens to be shitty. Like, that's really all it is. She's not, I never saw Lydia as a villain.
No, but she easily could have been written that way, you know?
See, Oldertree as kind of a villain, because he treats Jace like shit quite a bit.
Well,
but he is to come later on.
We'll get into Oldertree. I have a lot to say.
We'll get into Oldertree. Which, so... I believe the end of this scene, this
Magnus
court's out
Confetti.
Of order. The whole court's out of order, and Magnus Confetti, and Isabel is free. Isabel is happy.
Huzzah.
And safe, and she's going to be a shadow hunter for the rest of her life. Huzzah.
As long as they get the mortal cup. Right, isn't that
as long as they get the mortal cup.
As long as they get the mortal cup.
I think
cup.
So. As long as they get the mortal cup, if they don't get the mortal cup, this is all moot. But that brings us very neatly to this next scene.
Mm-hmm.
Clary's got plans. Nobody else knows, but Clary's got plans. Clary's got thoughts that she's put into process, I don't know, hours ago, 2 hours ago, 20 minutes ago.
Yeah.
You had to go and get your little your little crisscross item. I'm assuming you didn't walk around with that mug.
No.
Like you had to get it. You had to procure that item from somewhere. So this plan has been in place for a while.
It's true. So she found a crisscross item to do some magic with. But this is actually a moment from the book as well. This little switcheroo, which is one reason I was so excited to utilize it. But what we find is, you know, the demons are about to break in, the walls are about to come down, and they're like, use the cup. So Clary pulls the cup out of the card and tries to control the demons. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. It's failing. And Michael Wayland goes, let me try. And we go, oh, of course. We just hand the mortal cup over to this person that Clary's been suspicious of the whole episode. Sure, take the most precious item in the shadow world. And he tries it and it doesn't work either. And then suddenly Clary calls off the demons and they stop. She pulls out the real mortal cup. And
well, we just missed.
What did we miss?
We just missed a little element in the middle. So he takes the cup, Michael Wayland takes the cup and then turns and cuts his rune in half.
Oh, that's
right.
He does that first.
Michael Wayland is in fact Valentine and then tries to use the cup. But we've just found out that Michael Wayland, we mostly being Jace, the daddy, oh, great. Fuck. Nope. Sure isn't. That's Valentine. That sucks. But wait. Kat, keep talking.
Clary calls off the demons. And then the mortal cup that we first thought was the mortal cup turns into a number one dad mug. Oh, the irony.
The irony.
And Clary pulls out the real mortal cup from her bag that I carried around the entire season.
Yeah.
Comes in handy.
It does.
Messenger bag.
Didn't even look like it would fit a mortal cup without being fairly evident. And not only one, you fit two mortal cups in. You fit two cups in that thing somehow. It's like a book bag. It's designed for books.
Yeah.
But there you go. Anyway, Valentine's here.
Or cups.
Jace is pissed. Jace wants Valentine to be gone. He wants Valentine dead. But not before Valentine unhurdles some truth nuggets towards Jason Clary.
Oof.
Because what could someone possibly say?
Right.
To stop a blade at the throat of, you know, Darth Vader of our story, the big bad.
Yeah.
What could he possibly say that would stop Jace from running him through? And what does he say, Kat? What does he say?
He says, I was telling the truth. And I love how Alan plays this too, because he plays it so genuinely and sweetly and with such earnestness and desire to connect and, you know, reach you. And he's going, no, I was there. It was me the whole time. I've always been your father. We're a family. And Jace is going, no. What are you talking about? I am your father, Jace. Or no. Clary goes, what? He's my dad. We know this. Don't listen to him. And he goes, you're right, Clary. I am your father. And I'm also Jace's.
Yeesh.
Dun, dun, dun.
Big one. It's
Yikes.
A big one.
Yikes.
Oh, no. Yikes. I'm fresh with the thought of us making out. Oh, grim.
Right.
Oh, it's bad.
We had this lovely scene where we're finally like, yeah, we're
ruined.
In love. This is wonderful.
Ruined.
And you've been making out with your sibling.
Oh, dear.
Oh, God.
Oh, man.
How very
another standoff. Another standoff with the blade at Jace's throat. And Valentine is gone into the purple mirror. He's on off into the ether that is purple mirrors and portals in season one. And then no longer after season one. But with this devastating news.
But not before asking Jace to come with him.
Does he in this one?
Which is something we need to remember. He does. He says, Jace, come with me. You know, you're...
Hold on.
He says something like, you're a part of me, or you belong with me, or something like that. And your sister is more than welcome to come too.
Yeah, he says, you know that you love me. You know that you'll love me. Your sister's welcome to come too.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what he says. And then he disappears. He pushes Jace towards Clary. And then boom, covered in blood and torn up clothes, in comes
Luke.
Ready to save the day.
And runs straight to Jocelyn. And goes, I knew I'd find you. And he grabs her immediately. And there's something I didn't notice about this scene until rewatching it this time. And I don't know if Marzi did this on purpose or if it was just good luck in the blocking. Clary turns to see Luke and Jace doesn't. Yeah. And so what has happened is Clary's been looking at Jace and Valentine, that is her biological family. and then turns to see Luke and Jocelyn.
Yeah.
Which is her other family. So it's this dichotomy of having these two worlds, these two families, these two directions she's being pulled.
Very clever.
Kind of back to back in this way. And it was shot so perfectly that it just framed it very well. Yeah. I never noticed that before.
I guess that is one of the good things about shooting at the Hearn is like, you do have a lot of space, like a lot of sort of vacuumous space that a lot of times when you're blocking something, the issue becomes like, we don't have room to put the camera dolly in there. Like, we don't have room to make this happen. And that is never the problem in the Hearn. Just never. There's always room. There is always space.
We should also explain what the Hearn is. So the Hearn is this space in Toronto that is, I believe it's a coal refinery that's no longer used.
An ex-coal refinery, a lot
of the equipment's been gutted out of it. But it has all this cavernous space and these, you know, high windows and basically any kind of nondescript, decrepit, warehousey type creepy space.
Well, because it's like, I want to say like 4 or 5 stories tall. And it's, I mean, massive, massive, like volume wise, but there are no floors in it. And I don't know if they've been removed, if there were ever floors, but it's just empty, you know, 5 stories straight up. It's just empty, hundreds and hundreds of feet. So really all that's in there are the pillars, the load bearing pillars that hold it together. So it's just sort of a big empty shell of a building. And you get to see it a little more, I guess it's in season 3 when that crow... But we'll talk about it then. But you do get to see it.
308.
But 308. You get to see it a little more in its real sort of space there. But that was the Hearn. That was the famous Hearn that I'm sure you've heard us talking about many a time.
And it's a refrigerator as well, basically. It's colder inside than it is outside.
Somehow.
For some reason. Just the way that the heat gets distributed and the brick.
It doesn't make sense.
No. It's always cold and damp inside, even if it's, you know, snowing outside, it'll somehow be colder inside.
Ludicrous. Ludicrous.
Which we experienced.
Which we did.
Anywho. So now we get Jocelyn rocked off this news. We get back to the Institute. And we have to face all of the chaos that we incurred, be it Parabatai relationships.
Yeah, we've been gone for a while. Everything's been going on in that meantime. So we get the sort of the very heated, I guess it's like a combination of all of the different relationships that Alec and Jace have. Like, they're brothers in arms. They're also sort of soulmates. They're brothers, siblings. And they have another sibling, a sister, who was put in danger by Jace's actions. But then Jace was put in danger by Alec's actions. And we get all of these kind of coming to a head where both of them, as is so often the case, think that they're right. And in many ways, both of them are. And in many ways, both of them are wrong as well. So they end up just butting heads. And this scene is unfortunately left with the two of them separating again. Fortunately, from memory, I don't think that lasts very long.
It does not last very long.
And it's actually Alec who walks away from Jace this time and leaves Jace on his own, which is, given what he just heard, fairly devastating to potentially be losing another family member in this way.
Absolutely. With every good thing, there's always consequences. You know, we have Isabella's free, but now we have to give up the cup. And we have Jocelyn back, but we can't wake her up. And there's all of these things that we've worked so hard throughout the season to achieve. And yet there are other things that just keep undercutting this that we just can't quite get any sort of grasp. Something else I wanted to note that is another reason I really want to have Shelley Mansell, who is our wardrobe designer, on the show at some point to talk about everything, because so many of her choices, particularly with Clary's wardrobe as it changed throughout the season and throughout the series, were very intentional. And I remember for this episode, we specifically did not have, when she got back to the Institute, we picked, instead of like a leather jacket, we picked a denim shirt, but a black one. Because it was sort of that dichotomy of, yes, she's wearing black, she's wearing the color of the Shadowhunter, she's acknowledging this, but it's going, she's got her mom back, and there's so many things in her old life that would just be easier at this point, and starting to go back to that, the more comfortable and artisty, and the things that she used to wear, and what feels comforting to her. And it's just Shelley time and time again would put in those little details.
Yeah. I mean, costumes tell such, they tell such a huge part of the story. And between Shelley and Ange, like the work that they did mm-hmm. to adjust them to our sort of, you know, especially through season one, like our physicality was constantly changing because we were working out for these characters. So they would adjust as we were, you know, getting bigger or slimmer or whatever it was, it, that we were constantly changing, which is amazing. And they, the costumes really do tell such a huge part of this story that it would be amazing to be able to get them on and have them talk about it.
Absolutely.
We now are at a fairly heartbreaking scene with Magnus and Alec. Izzy is free. Mm-hmm. Payment is to be made to Magnus. One bow and one quiver. And it leads to this like separation of the two of them.
I know.
And I do believe this scene ends with, again, like a little sort of honest challenging there.
Yes. Magnus has a line in here that
yeah,
I love.
Neither of he you goes, deserve it. That's what he says.
Yeah. But he also acknowledges with Lydia. He goes, no, I get her. I like yeah. her. I get her. And yeah. and he's going, no, you don't get it, Alec. Yeah. This is not about me being jealous about you. This is about this. The situation is not right. And like you said, nobody mm-hmm. deserves this. And then he says, and neither do I. And that's, yeah. oh, Harry yeah. Shum punch to the heart.
Oh, it really is. Really, truly.
Oh, and then he doesn't take he doesn't take the bow and quiver in the end.
He doesn't take the bow and quiver. No.
Is this Think of Me When You Shoot Your Arrows?
Yeah.
Or is that, does is that it? Come later?
I don't know.
That's such a good line that gets quoted all the time. But I think that might come later on.
I think it's, I don't know what to do with these. Yeah, I wouldn't know what to do with these is what he says.
Okay.
And then he gives them back, which brings us to the ending of our show. A little debrief to Simon.
I love this
and
scene
one of
so
my
much.
Very favorite, like Luke Simon moments
yeah.
where like, Luke knows what he's going to tell Simon.
Yeah.
That's the purpose of this conversation, why they're talking.
Yeah.
But he gets to have a little fun with him first,
yeah.
which is really cool. And then we get this like really cute, like boy in love reaction from Simon. This really wonderful, just like, huh, so she can't be with him. So I guess the game is back on. Like, this is really cool.
Yeah.
And it's a really wonderful, like, Simon's gone through so much and he just gets this little win. He just gets this little like, you know what, bud, this one's for you. And it's so cute. It's so lovely. It's such a wonderful thing to see.
And it's really great too, because obviously Luke knows what it's like to be in Simon's position, given the Valentine and Jocelyn of it all. And especially given, you know, this last episode and everything that they've been through. It's nice for Luke to be able to go, hey kiddo, I gotcha. Here's a little yeah. something for your trouble. And
it's a little pick me up.
Yeah. And Alberto's just so adorable in how he reacts to this as Simon. Like, he plays it out in such a, and you can tell that the two of them are ad-libbing most of the last bit of the
100%.
Interactions.
Just and lots little, of fun.
And I'm just so glad they get to play and we have this moment
so
to
fun.
End the episode. Even though it's, you know, to Clace's detriment, so but that's okay.
It is to Clace's detriment, but listen, nothing worth having is easy. And you know what? I will sacrifice a little happiness just to make sure that Simon doesn't see another darker day. That's wonderful.
That's true.
That brings us to the end of our episode. We have such an exciting episode coming next.
Oh my
arguably
gosh.
The most exciting episode of season one.
Whew.
Something we were all very passionate about filming, something we were even more excited about to share with the world, and something that we have seen really impact a huge amount of the fans that we've interacted with. So make sure you tune into that one. But for the meantime, thank you so much for joining us. As always, thank you for supporting us and putting smiles on our faces week after week.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And we hope that the smiles we put on your faces are the same. What am I trying to say? I don't know what I'm trying to say. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.
Great. Great stuff. Return to the Shadows is hosted and executive produced by me, Dominic Sherwood, and Catherine McNamara. Our executive producer is Ling Li. Our senior producers are Liz Hayes and Diego Tapia. And our producers are Hannah Harris and Kristen Vermilia. Original music by Alex Kinsey, performed by Alex Kinsey and Catherine McNamara, and the episode was mixed by Seth Polansky.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah, and some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait, did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.